You are listening to Donuts and Top Cow.
Two great tastes that taste better together.
Thank you for listening to episode 19 of Donuts and Top Cow. My name is John Grigas. I'm one of your hosts.
And I'm Josh Crawley.
And the lovely lady who introduced us today and kicked things off was Donut Girl Leah. She is in the studio again today, delivered us some donuts from Cops Market on Whitney Way in Madison, Wisconsin. We've got some Long Johns today. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Westfield Comics. Westfield Comics can be found online at www.westfieldcomics.com for your online subscription to your door service at a nice 20% discount if you set up a service with Westfield Comics. If you're in Madison, stop by one of the retail stores located on Willie Street on the east side, that's Williamson Street, and on the west side just off of Mineral Point Road. So today, we are celebrating the 15th anniversary of Witchblade, Josh.
Woo-woo.
So 15 years ago, Witchblade, created by Mark Silvestri and Michael Turner, hit the stands, and it's come a long way since then. I think I tweeted out this morning, I read Witchblade 1, and then I read the issue that we're going to be talking about, Witchblade 144. And this series has come a long way.
Yeah, I also wanted to throw in there, too, Christina Z and David Wohl for creators. There might be a fifth one listed at some point. I'm going to check right here. I know it always seems like there's a big, long list, but, you know, don't want to leave anyone out.
No, we certainly don't want to leave anyone out.
Yeah, I know Christina Z and David Wohl are part of all that, too.
So. Well, I do know, yeah, because I read issue 1 and 2, and then I jumped over to issue 8, and that, you know, that's where Christina Z's name started showing up in the credits.
Okay. So
in the first issue, it was just David Wohl, Brian Haberlin, and Michael Turner.
Yeah, Brian Haberlin, that's who I was thinking of.
So it's the Witchblade. It has gone through many incarnations over time, but really Witchblade 1 starts with Sarah Pizzini, who's the Witchblade bearer we know the best.
Though Sarah actually first appeared with the Witchblade before Witchblade number 1. Psyblade She, Battle for the Independence? Yes. With a TS, not a CE. But, yeah.
And what was the circumstance there?
My guess is they just knew they were going to do the series, so they're like, hey, we're going to throw her in here to get a little cameo quick. Because, yeah, then I think that was continued into She Psyblade. Yeah, nothing too in-depth there. It was mostly just crazy gauntlet, powerful armored lady. Quick appearance.
Witchblade 144 is written by Ron Mars with art by Stefan Sajic and letters by Troy Pateri. And I know in the solicitation they seek to retell the origin of the Witchblade. So basically, it looks to me like Ron is trying to condense Witchblade 1 through 8 into most of a single issue size story.
I think it worked pretty well. Not that it's too spoilery to tell you how he did it, but there's some narration, and we actually kind of get this retelling without Sarah or Gleason really showing up too much right now.
Yeah, it's fairly exposition heavy, and I guess we will talk about how the story is presented. And as Josh says, I don't necessarily believe it's spoilery. Plus, I do think that in addition to the story, you really should pick this up for the artwork. He's really on his A game, and I just really enjoyed reading the story for the artwork as much as the writing, which is unique for me. I like the artwork, but usually I'm there for the writing primarily. The story also, if you approach it and say, well, I already know the origin of the Witchblade, and I read the Witchblade Origins trade, or I've seen enough write-ups about it that I don't need to know, I think that you would benefit from checking this out. This is definitely a story. This is definitely going somewhere, and the character that's either introduced or reintroduced at the beginning of this issue definitely will come into play. And the scenario is that a lieutenant investigator, Lieutenant Phipps, from Internal Affairs, was investigating, and he's at a bank where Jake, who's somebody that we saw in Witchblade 1, Jake is one of Sarah's co-workers and then for a time was her partner up until about Witchblade 80, I guess, or 82 or 3. If you get that first Witchblade trade, the first modern trade, then you know Jake because he's figures pretty prominently in that first story arc.
Yeah, I think that's where he... I suppose that would be spoilery. But yeah, he's not her partner after that. But he ends up being around till around issue 100. One way or another. Bum, bum, bum.
One way or another. But here's where the spoiler has to come in, is that the investigator, Lieutenant Phipps, is in to investigate Detective Jake McCarthy, who is quoted as having committed suicide some time ago. And so he was asking to get to a safe deposit box, which he produced a key for, and feigned that he had an executed warrant. Actually, by the time we're reading this, we see that it's an executed warrant. So they say, well, no need for the paperwork. You've got the key. I'll just give you the box. And in it, he goes through the box. There's some mementos, some of which we've seen before, some of which we may not have. But the most important one for the storyline is a letter that is written in an envelope. And that's how we really learn about the history of Sarah Pizzini, because the letter is an exposition about what he has learned or what he knows about Sarah and her connection to the Witchblade.
I thought it was pretty well done. It was, you know, not just, oh, hey, look, we're going to do the same third person, just condense it all. It was nice to actually have it done from a character's perspective, one that we probably didn't really get too often. And going back to the whole, oh, I know the origin already, this and that, it's kind of one of those things, you know, that shouldn't stop anyone from necessarily not trying something out. I mean, look at all the comic book movies that have origins in them, and go figure, people are still going to watch them. So that argument isn't really going to hold too much water with me when people are like, oh, I know it, don't need to know. Because a lot of, and I'd say really a lot of this is kind of about Jake.
There is a lot.
It's kind of nice to get some
Jake.
Of that, even though he's been gone for a while.
Some of his perspective. And I know, well, when we were talking about artifacts before, basically before it started, when we were looking at Artifact Zero and moving forward through the first couple, I've been laying low wondering where and how Jake is going to pop up again anyway. He was killed under some supernatural circumstances. And as you know, in fantasy books and in comics, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're buried and gone.
Yeah, it wasn't a bullet through the head or anything. So, yeah, because I think at one point I even might have said I thought the survivor in Artifacts might have been Jake.
Yeah, I did. You did bring that possibility. And the Witchblade origin here, it's a good point that you bring it up, that it focuses on Jake, because one thing I thought it would focus more on would be Kenneth Irons and Ian Nottingham, who definitely appear, and they definitely feature prominently into the first encounter Sarah has in her own book with the Witchblade. But really, they're kind of passed off as being factors that had the Witchblade when Sarah first encountered it, but they don't really play as much into the story as I thought they might have. As characters, I mean, the storyline is there, but their character development is very different. And maybe I have that perspective because I just read 1-8 this morning. But it really seemed to me, I don't know what Michael Turner or Mark Silvestri or any of the other creators might have had in mind, but Kenneth Irons comes to me as, in their mind, what Bruce Wayne would be if Bruce Wayne was obsessed by something else other than the death of his parents.
You know, it might just be a reflection on the years of development since, though. Because, you know, yeah, when we first saw Kenneth and Ian, it was kind of, this is what these guys are. But then, you know, as time went on, we got to know more and more. Because figure in the beginning, what we knew about Ian was pretty much nothing. I think we actually find out possibly more about Ian in this issue than we did in those first 8.
Yeah, I think you're right. And
oh, yeah, because you're ex-Special Air Service, which I don't think that was even revealed until well after the first eight issues. So, I mean, it's not just condensed, but it also is incorporating kind of, I don't want to say, not retconning, but condensing a bunch of characterization and adding it to the original to kind of...
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. There's some other nods to the original arc. When we first see Sarah in Jake's recollection, she's being chewed out by her sergeant, and that is accurate to the story. Although, and the circumstances of why she's getting chewed out, basically being a little extra aggressive with your perpetrators. And that's consistent. But then we get a little nod from Stefan Sejic to the red latex dress that she wore pretty much all through Witchblade 1 and 2, which with some nice thigh-high latex red boots to go with them. And she gets a full page length of that. And Ian Nottingham also, with the long black hair, is wearing the same coat as in that first issue and some other things. So they're definitely paying homage to the details of that first story arc, but streamlining some things and so that it fits a little better into the modern Witchblade that we've been reading for the last few years. There is a double page splash towards the end of the story that alludes to the history of the Witchblade, and as we've come to know the Witchblade has been passed down over generation, mainly to women. And there's a double page splash that's also kind of duplicated on the A cover of this issue 144 that shows some of the wielders, some of the bearers. It also shows the Darkness and the Angelus enraptured, which led to the Witchblade being the balance between the two of them. And that's another, we always have these poster moments, but that's another one that would be pretty interesting poster to...
Yeah, this one's pretty awesome. Though, actually, since you mentioned the wraparound cover on the A cover, don't have a copy of it in my hand, but...
I'm totally wrong as I look at this.
The one thing I don't know is I don't know who that woman is on the back cover. Unless, because some of that stuff is stuff throughout, I think those are all people that are, kind of been throughout the time frame of, timeline. The only thing, because she looks slightly reminiscent of someone that was in Fathom, maybe? But it also looks like it might be the character that showed up in the Evo crossover that was Tomb Raider Fathom Witchblade, I think. Maybe.
So if anybody's got that out, an idea, tweet that out or email us, because that's pretty fascinating. Because looking at this,
or it could be
cover,
a look at the future too. You know, just one of those. Oh, who's this person?
Yeah, that's good. That's a good point.
I do my research too well for this one.
On the right side of the cover, which becomes the side you see while it's on the shelf, you have Sarah displayed prominently, and then you have Ian Nottingham standing behind her with a mystical sword. And is that Jake that is actually shown wield in the Witchblade?
No, that's Kenneth Irons.
That's Kenneth Irons with a lot longer hair and looking a lot younger. But I guess somebody who's somewhat more...
Well, I'm going to go with that Sage is just... Oh, no. No, that's... Yeah. He had hair that long, because that hair over there is Sarah's hair. But yeah, Irons had hair that long, because usually he slicked it had it slicked back and stuff. I'm just going to go with whatever that creative... I don't remember
creative
that term.
License.
Yeah, there we go.
Well, and you're totally right, because as I'm thinking, in Witchblade 7 and 8, and 8 particularly, for a short period of time, Kenneth Irons takes the Witchblade from Sarah as a big part of that storyline.
Yeah.
He doesn't hold it long, and he doesn't get all of it when he takes it, but he does wield it, and does battle with her. So he may be... Now, would he be the only male wielder of the Witchblade that you know of?
Sort of. But Ian had a fragment of it known as Excalibur for a while there, maybe around issue 60? I haven't read a lot of that stuff in that time frame. Between... I think I read a good chunk of it up through about issue 30, but then I didn't maybe read a lot of stuff between 30 and 80. Which eventually I will get back to filling in the gaps there.
Yeah, I think I see us reading through that, and this is almost kind of the kickoff for that. We're getting a touch back to the Witchblade origins as it relates to Sarah Pizzini. And here we are 15 years later with 144 with a pretty good wrap-up. The story itself, showing the... how Sarah came to get it, wraps up with the investigator taking Jake's letter with him and thanking for her, you know, replacing it with a Chinese food menu, basically, and so stealing it under the guise of the bank and then walking out with it. And then he calls his colleagues, and that's when we find out it's actually his day off. He's kind of acting independently, but he does say in the last splash panel, "I think I might have something." So he's obviously been watching Sarah for a while, and that's going to figure into some serious storylines moving forward.
He's up to shenanigans. Jumping back, though, real quick, since we were talking about streamlining the this and the that and some of the details, it actually looks like, in parts, Sayich slightly maybe... tweaked what Sarah was wearing while she was battling Ian during that initial story arc, because instead of just having tiny little armory bikini, she actually has more of a full one-piece swimsuit style armor, so we still see some, you know, plenty of thigh and some curves, but it makes a little more sense.
Yeah, and it's not as, I guess, breast-tastic as the Michael Turner art was known to be. So Stefan Sayich definitely has evolved this costume into something that's makes a lot more sense, I guess, from a battle armor standpoint.
Yeah.
And isn't as cheesecakey as well. So that also helps to update us.
I think it finds a good balance.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah. And that's why I was disappointed to hear the news that you shared with me this morning.
Yeah, I got to double-check more of that, but... Stefan Sayich will be leaving Witchblade soon and going on to a new monthly.
And I hope that's a new Top Cow monthly.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is.
And he'll be missed on the Witchblade for sure. Did Maybe they announce an artist that would take his place?
I don't believe so, no. I'll probably have to double check, find all that information. Maybe we can talk about it more in depth next time.
Sounds good. The Witchblade 144 is also an extra-sized issue. We've got a bonus, looks like 8-page story, written by Philip Sablik, and it centers around Patrick Gleason. Gives a little bit of, and tells his origin. It's very complimentary to the Sarah Pizzini Witchblade origin story, because this also is told as exposition, but instead of reading a letter from someone talking about what they know, it's some friends sitting around in a bar after hours sharing stories about their first encounter with Patrick Gleason and trying to show some of the qualities that inform his character and his integrity and his willingness to take a leadership role even when he's not a leader.
I totally zoned out. Did you mention who the artist was?
Yeah, the artist, and this is what brought me there quick. The artist is John Tyler Christopher, who's been just kicking it out of the park on... Yeah, that's a dumb metaphor. I tell you. So hitting it out of the
a little
park,
mixing never hurt anyone.
I guess so. That's right. You know, were we upset when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor? You know, that kind of thing. So anyway, John Tyler Christopher was the artist, and I don't know if he's been announced for his next book, but I could see him jumping onto Witchblade.
I don't know that he's necessarily quick enough, maybe.
That's possible.
Just because it's not like he's done a lot of sequential work.
I've really only seen his covers, so, and then a couple short stories. He had a story in the Witchblade Annual, and he draws this for the secret origin of Patrick Gleason, basically, which is decent character display. It didn't tell me enough, I don't think, about him. I think two anecdotes would have worked better than stretching out the one anecdote where he got involved and settled a riot situation. And then in the back, there's also some bonus pinups of Sarah wielding the Witchblade.
Getting back real quick, though.
Yeah.
Because I liked the information in the Secret Origin. I didn't necessarily... Wow. I can't even pronounce that. Necessarily care for the multiple people all talking, especially when it's done as voiceover. I just... Very frequently to me, it ends up being just... There's too many people. I mean, they're all saying nice things, but it's like, maybe two people or...
Yeah.
Yeah, it just...
Yeah, there were a couple times. You can't read it fast, because if you did, then you'd go, oh, wait a minute, who's talking, and where did I miss that? And you go back and read, so...
But the general information, I mean, which basically all alludes to how he... basically was even really awesome as a rookie cop, which that's cool. And you know, has touched the lives of these somewhat important people in shall we say the greater New York area.
Definitely. This story kind of suggests to me that they're going to continue to build and develop him. And I know that in Artifacts, one of the things we've kind of speculated is whether he's going to
be sacrificed.
And so this kind of story kind of suggests that he may be around for a while, I think, but we'll find out.
But you know, remember when Amber Benson was finally added to the regular cast credits of Buffy? The episode she was added was the episode they killed her. So I don't know, you know, we finally get Gleason's Secret Origin. Maybe it's just going to be that twisting the knife of, oh, too bad.
Yeah.
But as we've seen, you know, I mean, best example would be Jake right now. Just because someone's dead in the book doesn't mean their presence isn't still felt, and we still don't get characterization about them. Artifacts 1, Julie was killed, but it's, you know, a cause and effect. They're not cause and effect. Action, reaction. So, you know, we're still... It's not like, oh, yes, she's dead. Okay, don't worry about it.
That's a great point. That had a big impact reaction on me when I saw that. That was fully unexpected. Like, it was the last thing I expected to see, and it had a pretty strong impact because of it. So that's a pretty good point. A couple of the other differences I saw... We saw a couple of nods to the original run on Witchblade in this issue. Another thing I saw, one difference and one omission over the years, I hadn't seen it in any of Ron Mars's Witchblade issues, I don't think, and that is a pretty frequent use of a nickname for her as Pez. All the people that were dealing with her were calling her Pez.
Yes. Well, but part of that may be because those were all people that knew her. It was people she'd been around a while, and then Ron basically took her out of that.
That's true. Switched her precinct. And
yeah.
Could be.
I was never overly fond of that nickname myself, so guess I didn't really mind at all.
I didn't like it when I saw it, so I was glad that they've dropped it. So.
And actually, speaking of, maybe this came up on Twitter. Someone had maybe asked Ron... Or maybe it was an interview or something. It had come up something about his length of time on the book. And, I think someone asked him if he'd been the writer that had been on the book the longest. Well, at this point, I mean, give it another 20 issues maybe, and he will have been on the book for over half of its run. So it's going to take ages for anyone to even come close at this point.
Yeah.
Because I haven't actually looked to see who was on for a long time before. I know Paul Jenkins...
We're recording really early on a Sunday here today.
And they're both P names.
Right.
But, you know, Paul Jenkins had been on for a little while. So, I mean, it's... little bit longer, a little bit shorter for some people. But yeah, at this point, I mean, Ron's been on so long that it's...
Well, he's had a major impact on
her. It's almost hard
to
say, oh, this happened for a little while here. It's like, well, he's been on so long that it's like getting to the point where that stuff's not the majority anymore.
Yeah. Well, and she, Witchblade has shown up in other media, and I have to say I haven't seen any of it. I know there was a TV series, which, according to IMDb and some other internet sources, was pretty well liked and received, but it ran in 2001 and 2002 with Yancey Butler playing Sarah Pazzini, and Jake and Ian Nottingham and Kenneth Irons were prominent characters as well.
I think I saw the premiere of that back at Wizard World Chicago, 2001 maybe, but that was all I really ever saw of it. What I have seen multiple times, though, because I own it, is the Witchblade anime.
And the Witchblade anime first came out in 2006, and that's also very popular, but that's not Sarah Pazzini wielding the Witchblade.
It is not, and I do not remember the name of the person wielding it, but...
It's Masame, is that her name?
Masane,
and then it's a mother, basically, who took up the Witchblade to protect her daughter.
Yeah, and then there's... gorgeous character designs. Yeah, the brain's still firing here a little bit. Misfiring, rather. Yeah, it's kind of a corporation's basically trying to weaponize the Witchblade, and even at one point starts kind of making artificial Witchblades.
Oh, that's interesting. Is it good? Do you recommend it?
Maybe it's just the anime I've seen. I don't want to say all anime is like that, but it seemed to kind of fit a similar formula to other 26-episode anime series. And there's some stuff I just don't care about it, but in general, I'd say it's, you know, worth the viewing. Later in the series, it's probably going to... It's kind of one of those things where the first half is maybe a little more comedic, and then as it goes on, it gets a little more serious.
There's a manga series of Witchblade. Does that relate at all to the anime, or is...
No. I mean, not directly. It's not the same character or anything.
Right,
it's basically just another bearer of the Witchblade, also in Japan. I don't know where that interview was. There was an interview someplace, though, where the mangaka who... wrote it and drew it, basically did it with the intent of kind of doing it for Western audiences and wanted it to kind of fit, but not necessarily, you know. I don't quite know where I was going with all that. Huh. Though Ron has said at some point he did kind of want to tie it all together. So I don't know if maybe at some point in the future how or when he will do it, but maybe we'll start seeing that corporation popping up in one form or another. Maybe the Survivor has something to do with that company, corporation, Daily Mabobber.
Well, we're moving over in Asia now, so that's... It could be. And then there's a movie on the books that now it's slated for a 2013 release. It had been slated for a 2009 release, and still listed as being directed by Michael Reimer, who is one of the producers and directors for the Battlestar Galactica reboot on TV.
I want that movie to come out really, really bad. Make that movie happen.
Yeah, that would be...
Preferably not with armor that looks like the Yancey Butler armor.
We'll have a premiere party in Madison.
Heck yeah.
We'll offer some hotel rooms and some other amenities, make it a big event if that can happen. We'd be up for that.
We have theaters here. Though, actually, I'm going to take the blame for this. You were about to, at one point in 144, actually talk about the pinups in the back.
Right.
And there's some pretty cool ones. Andy Smith and Andrew Dalhouse, Paul Harding, Lee Motor and Michael Atiyah, Cedric Nocon and Zeon Studios, and Witchblade 145 cover, next issue perspective.
Yeah, and that's kind of... You're going through the pinups, and you've got another pinup of really the cover for Witchblade 145 potentially is kind of next. It's an advertisement, but it fits in, it flows in pretty well with the pinups that followed. And then the last few issues of the book, they do a few pages of Netherworld 1, which we talked about on our last episode.
Yeah, I just figured before we got too far completely straying away from this issue, we'd go over those real quick. I liked those. Need me some pinups every so often.
Yep. So we're fans of the Witchblade. We like what they've been doing. I like how they've really enriched the lore of the Witchblade. I've said before, I really like the idea of some stories from the past of other wielders of the Witchblade and what they've gone through in the history of time. It opens up so many possibilities, and it's still moving pretty rapidly and interestingly in these storylines. I don't know how long Sarah Bazzini is going to be the wielder of the Witchblade, because, you know, we all grow old, and it seems in the Top Cow universe we have people develop and move forward, so I don't know how that goes. So that's been cool. And Witchblade may not have been the first Top Cow title, but I would definitely call it the flagship title now.
Oh yeah, definitely. Because the original Cyberforce ongoing was 20-some issues. And actually, as I was driving here this morning, I was thinking, oh, Witchblade 144, if it were 12 issues a year, it would have been 12-year anniversary. But I was reminded of the days, reminded myself of the days when Top Cow used to actually ship everything every 6 weeks. It was kind of their guaranteed schedule for the books.
They drop everything.
And in this day and age of everything's got to be a monthly book, I don't mind a month and a half or so for stuff like that. So if anyone was like, oh, it should have been the 12-year anniversary, that's going to be part of the reason why. Plus other miscellaneous schedule stuff.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And then they didn't, you know, I suppose they could be like, hey, we're going to bump this up to 3 times a month. And then I would be enraged. Totally just babbling now. I mean, not that I wouldn't want to read a good Witchblade book 3 times a month. Don't get me wrong. But makes it a little bit harder to sell stuff sometimes when it comes out quite that often.
Well, we're big fans of the Witchblade, and we'd like to know what you think as well. If you've got a good Sarah perspective, or any of the people in her lore and storyline, drop us an email, dtcpodcast@gmail.com, or you can send us a message on Twitter. We're dtcpodcast on Twitter as well. We'd love to hear from you, and also check us out on iTunes. I think now that we're here in our 19th episode, I think it's time to release our show to the public and not just the set of friends that we've been targeting it directly at. But
I don't know. I look at the numbers sometimes, and I didn't think I don't know how many friends you have, but I can't find that many people that actually listen to us. But then I compare it to the downloads, and it's, you know, it's a pretty big difference.
Well, so part of it helps that we're in the comic book noise feed. So we get a chance to get listened to by people who may not be looking necessarily for Top Cow, and I hope we can kind of draw them over
to the dark side. Mwahaha.
The other thing is, and I'm finding this out more and more all the time, we have a lot more listeners than I have friends, I think, too. So it's really good. Because our contest for the month of May was to follow us on Twitter. And as we record this, we still have a couple days left in May. You won't be hearing this in the month of May. But our contest was for a Top Cow giveaway package. And every day we've got a few more followers on Twitter. And really the only way that you can know about the contest or to do it is to listen to the show. So thanks for listening. We really appreciate your time that you put into it. There's a lot of choices out there. So we're glad that you are taking a look at the Top Cow universe. And it's been really cool to connect with people who say that they've only been on the fringe with Top Cow, but now they're, you know, Artifacts kind of got them in, and our podcast has kind of helped them stay in the universe, because it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, it has. Also, we're on Facebook too.
That's right. We have
maybe
a
that should
page.
Be June's contest. Like us on Facebook.
June sounds good. We could use some Facebook interaction.
Yeah, though. Of course, if you listen regularly, you've probably recall us babbling about this last time. when John or I actually use the page, it doesn't let us post as ourselves. So sometimes you just got to maybe figure out, because I don't always specify who it is.
Hey, maybe that's the contest. We'll put a couple posts up, and you have to guess whether it was from me or from you.
Ooh.
It'd be kind of like a scavenger hunt.
Yeah.
Facebook scavenger hunt contest. We'll think this out. Next episode, we'll clue you in on what the next contest will be. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Drive-Thru Comics. Drive-Thru Comics is an online digital comic retailer. They have a wide variety of Top Cow comics for you to download. And they also have sponsored our prize. On Free Comic Book Day, we had some of our friends and listeners record some bios of main Artifacts characters. We're going to listen to another one right now, and this is another candidate. A random drawing is going to take place for the Cyberforce Hunter Killer trade paperback. So whenever you're ready, here is Monica reading about Sarah Pizzini.
Sarah Pizzini, bearer of the Witchblade. Sarah is the consummate career New York police detective. Born into a cop family, Sarah grew up believing that she would die standing with a .38 caliber clutched in her death grip. Life has dealt Sarah a child, an overly understanding boyfriend, and a mystical gauntlet known as the Witchblade. Sarah loves Patrick Gleason, but as her professional partner in the Special Cases Division, she hates to think of the day being discreet is no longer enough, and she has to choose between her job and a sweetheart. Wielding an ancient artifact that acts less like an ornate Kevlar vest and more like a lightning rod for the supernatural doesn't make her dangerous job any safer. More and more, the Witchblade proves itself a liability and an indispensable tool to protect her family.
So thanks again for listening. We'll see you next week.
Good journey.